that you had time to go through the homework. That would be nice if at least the first two questions were something that you could do nicely, and we are all happy with that. In any case, even if you didn't do it, I'll encourage you to just work through the first two questions, the open streams. That would be nice if you could do it in the next few days, just as so that, well, you will see today why I'm encouraging you to do that. So let's start by doing a small review of what we did on Friday. And finally today, so on Friday, probably you remember we started, or we tried our first attempt to quantize a string, okay? And we found that there was a problem, okay? So finally today, we will go all the way through and we will quantize it nicely all the way to the end. Well, that's what I hope. So let's start. So last time we found for the closed string, last week, we found that the important objects are the oscillators, okay? In the quantum theory, we'll promote them to be operators, and the reality condition on the field becomes the following. We say that if we have m greater than 0, okay, we define these guys to be annihilation operators. And through this relation, we define the creation operators. Okay? So we also said that from the Poisson bracket structure, we go into the quantization, and we found the following commutation relations. We say, well, if they correspond to different components in space-time, they don't talk to each other. So how do we tell that? Well, with Eta mu nu. We say, well, if m is not equal to minus n, or if n is not equal to m, then they shouldn't talk to each other, because it's only then that they are the Hermitian conjugate to the other one, or the adjoint operator to the other one. So the way we impose that is by saying that there must be this delta function. Okay? It's only then when they talk to each other. And we also found that there was something funny here. There was an m. And that's why we had to redefine the operators in order to have a nice commutation relation that looks like the commutation relation for harmonic oscillators. Okay? So we found the same thing for the alpha tildes. And we also said that the alpha tildes and the alphas don't talk to each other. Okay. That's very good. We define a vacuum, or this was our first attempt to define the quantum theory. We said, well, this is all great. We just have a set of harmonic oscillators. So we know how to quantize a harmonic oscillator. So we should be able to quantize an infinite number of harmonic oscillators. So we define a vacuum, as usual, as a state in the Hilbert space that is annihilated by all the annihilation operators. Okay, so that's our vacuum. And we define all the states in our theory to be states created with the creation operators, any number of them, acting on the vacuum. And here is when we found the problem, right? So we found a terrible problem, and the reason was that if an odd number of labels of the mu labels happens to be 0, then our state has negative norm. Well, it doesn't have to be minus 1. It happens to be negative. We did it explicitly for the following state. We did it explicitly for state, say, do you remember? So what happened to this state? When we tried to compute this norm, we found that the norm was this. But this is very easy to compute. All you have to use is a commutation relation, right, to bring this guy to the other side and this guy to the other side. But if you look at the commutation relations, because of the signature of our spacetime, which is minus plus 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 plus, okay? Now you know why we choose that signature, because it's nice to just have one problem and not have d minus one problems, right? Then this guy ended up being minus one, okay? So unitarity doesn't seem to be a property of our system. So everything that you did this morning in quantum information will definitely not work in this theory. But we know this was a little bit cheap, right? We're quantizing a system that is not our system. Remember, we were quantizing just a free action, just the action of the X's, okay? Just the action of the scalar fields, pretending that that was it, that was the end of the story. But we know that that's not true. Our theory is the very simple action that we got plus the constraints. So we have an infinite number of negative norm states, but we also have an infinite number of constraints. So there is some hope that, in fact, the constraints will be able to kill all those guys and give us a sensible theory. Or at least that's a hope. So what were the constraints? Well, remember, we had the Vieira Soro generators, and we set them to be zero. These are the modes of the energy momentum tensor. And the constraint is actually that the energy momentum tensor vanishes, and therefore each of the modes has to vanish. Okay, so we have these conditions. Classically, now quantum mechanically, we would say that any physical state must be annihilated by these guys with m greater than zero. Okay, and we know that this is true. Therefore, the set with m less than zero happens to annihilate these other guys. Okay. So that's a way we make consistent the condition in the quantum theory. Now, what happens when you go from classical operators or classical objects to quantum objects? What can happen in between, in the process when you go from one quantity that depends, say, on x and p to a quantity that is an operator? What can go wrong when you go to the quantum theory? You can have ordering issues. If you're lucky, if you're only dealing with objects that commute, then there are no ordering issues, and you go all the way to the quantum theory, and everything is fine. Are we going to have any ordering problems here? Well, let's remind ourselves what these operators are in terms of the oscillators. So this is still part of the review, right? Remember, this is what the objects, what the Vieira Soro generators were classically. Well, of course, these are too many indices. So let me just use this notation. Hopefully, it's not going to be confusing. The dot means the space-time contraction. Okay? Now, remember the commutation relations. When do we have do we ever have an ordering problem? Doesn't seem that we don't have any ordering problems, right? Because this looks great. They commute. Well, they commute in an infinite number of cases. In fact, they commute except in one case. When m is equal to 0 is the only case where they don't commute. Precisely the guys that have a non-trivial commutation relations are the ones that we are contracting. So we are definitely in trouble here. Okay? So these guys, for m greater than 0, go straightforwardly into quantum operators. And we put the normal ordering just to remind ourselves that these are quantum operators. But in this case, it doesn't really matter because we know that they commute. Okay. In this case, we will also like to put normal ordering here. But how do we know? We have an ambiguity. Okay. Half of this sum is in the correct order, and half of it is in the incorrect order. Of course, the L0 is not an operator, or it's just the identity operator, because it becomes the momentum square. But the other half, we don't know what to do with it. So that means that whenever we define the action of L0 on a physical state, we cannot declare that it vanishes, because there is this normal order ambiguity. But what can the ambiguity be? The ambiguity is just a number, right? Because it depends only on the ordering, and the ordering can be fixed by the permutation, by the commutation relation, and the commutator of these guys is just a number. So whatever failure of this thing, or whatever ambiguity, has to be parameterized by a number. So this is just a number. Is that clear? So we should allow physical states not to be annihilated by L0, but actually to be eigenvectors of L0 with some number, which will be the eigenvalue. And at this point, we have no way of finding what A is. Let's see if by some physical requirement, we can find that there is a value of A. Otherwise, well, that will turn out to be some free parameter in the theory somehow. That would be a little bit disappointing if that's the case. Okay, very good. So let's see how the mass square, or the spectrum of the theory, will look like, or the mass operator will look like, once we take this into account. Remember, a nice way of writing L0 is pulling out the zeroth component and then writing using half of the sum, bring it back. Okay. Now that we're putting normal orderings, it's actually more so because they become exactly the same objects. Okay. So we're removing the half because we're using half of the sum, flipping it, which in fact is the same because we have normal ordering, and that's how we're defining L0. And this piece is just proportional to P squared, which happens to be proportional to, which happens to be minus the mass square of the string in space-time. So this is a mass in space-time. This is something we did last week, too. Okay. Now, if we use that in this equation, what do we find is the mass of a physical state? Well, if we're given a physical state, the way to compute the mass, let's say in the closed string, so we are still doing the closed string, we just plug this in here, okay? And find this equation, where this n is called the number operator, okay, which is nothing but this object here. Okay. Therefore, the more you excite this state, the higher the mass will be, right? Any questions? Well, yes. So do you remember in the mode expansion of the string, right? We found something like this. Right? And we computed the charge associated to translations in space-time. right, and found precisely that the charge was given by computing x dot mu integrated from 0 to pi. That's the way we computed the charge. And that happened to be alpha 0, right? Because the derivative with respect to time drops this guy. The oscillators completely go away because we're integrating from 0 to pi, so the oscillators are not contributing to that. Is that clear to everybody? Do you remember that derivation? Okay. Very, very quickly, we said something like this. 0 to pi, d sigma, x dot, we only get contribution from here, and the oscillators cancel because we have an integral from 0 to pi, and that's how we related alpha 0 mu to the momentum. Okay? So if you don't remember that, review that. That's very important because we're going to be switching from alpha 0 to momentum all the time. Okay? Very good. Very good question because I should have reminded you of the connection. Yes?
So the L naught is defined that way, and in the last line of this part, you pull out the alpha zero term, and that the remaining term you write it in the normal order way. But why isn't there any actual term, since the definition of alpha naught is not normal order? So why you can use the zero?
Yes, indeed. So, right. So this is my definition in the quantum theory. And then all I'm saying is that I have no right to impose that this annihilates. I can define L0 wherever I want. The question is, what does it do on the physical states? That's an important question, right? So on the classical theory, I have to impose that this vanishes. Naively, you would think that you have to impose that it kills the physical states. And your question is very good. You're saying, well, why should you... You can define whatever you want. Now, the question is, should you impose that this operator annihilates the physical states? That should be the question. Should I impose that L0 phi is equal to 0, just as in the classical theory? And the answer is no, I shouldn't do this, because there is no guarantee that this classical operator goes into this quantum operator. So you're right. There is no connection between this guy and this guy. I shouldn't actually say that they are the same, that this operator came from this classical object. Because there is normal ordering ambiguity, so I should allow for a constant. This might not be true in the quantum theory. There is no reason to believe that it's true. So all I can do is to allow this operator to take a physical state into itself as a constant, which is a measure of the normal ordering ambiguity. Okay? Is that clear to everybody? This is a very important point. So it's okay if we spend time discussing. Yes?
I just didn't really follow why the Wi-Fi should be an eigenvector of L0.
Yes, so classically, the constraints were that Ln had to be 0. Quantum mechanically, we say, well, the operator, an operator being 0, what it means is that it annihilates any state in your physical Hilbert space. Okay? So for these guys, we're dead sure that that has to happen, because these guys go into quantum operators uniquely. There is no ambiguity, and they have to annihilate that. Now, L0, we wish it was true that we can just take it to be an operator straightforwardly from here, and just declare that it has to annihilate the physical states, any physical state. What we're saying is that it's not, we don't know whether it's true or not. But whatever failure can only be a constant. The reason is that, you see, the only reason I don't know that this actually goes into this is that for half of the sum, these guys are in the wrong order. So when I flip them around, I'll pay a price of a number. Every time I do it, I pay a price, right? In order to bring this into this form, I have to pay a price. Is that clear to everybody? When the n's are negative, I have the alphas in the wrong order. I have the creation operator here and the annihilation operator here. So you have to flip them around. And that means that I pay a price of a number, right? Because the commutator is just a number. And therefore, I have to allow for a number here which I don't know what it is, okay? Of course, if you don't like this, yes?
The problem that we have to interchange to get them in normal ordering also happens in the fourth case different from 0, Ln.
No, because they commute.
Oh.
Remember the commutators, right? Only when this number happens to be minus this number, you get a non-zero commutation relation.
Okay.
If they commute, we're completely happy. It's like having x1, p2. Who cares that you have x1, p2? That goes into a quantum operator perfectly, because x1, meaning x in the one direction and momentum in the two direction, they commute. So you are completely happy. That goes into a quantum operator. In fact, that's the reason why the angular momentum operator, you can just freely say, oh, I have x mu, p mu, minus x nu, p mu. I can say, oh, that's a quantum operator. And what's the reason? The reason is that the mu's and the nu's can never be the same because the angular momentum operator is antisymmetric, so they always commute, right? So we can just take the angular momentum operator straight into the quantum theory and no problem. Yes?
How do we know that A is not infinite? Because you switch them an infinite number of times.
No, you see? Yes and no. If I start from this and I want to write this, literally like this, yes, I'll pay the price of an infinite constant. But I don't know. I have no idea. Remember, this is not a prescription to go from the classical theory to the quantum theory. When there is an ordering ambiguity, there is no prescription. It's not a rule that you start from this and go to this, okay, and pay the price. Because any classical, I mean, who told you that to write it like this, right? I could have written it already without the half, and classically it doesn't matter, right? So there is no rule. All I'm saying is that I don't know at the moment what this number is. Hopefully, the theory will make sense for some number, maybe for all. If it's for all, it will be a disaster. If it's for none, it will be a disaster. So let's hope for the best and hope that there is one value or a discrete number of values for which this thing makes sense, for which the theory makes sense. Okay? Very good. So this was great. Some philosophical discussion on quantum mechanics. Okay. Now, in the closed string, we also know that we have the alpha tilde operators and we have the L tilde Virasoro generators, right? So we can follow the same derivation and actually find that the same formula is true. There is, in fact, no difference, okay? For the N tilde. Now, we would expect that the normal ordering ambiguity on both sectors happens to be exactly the same. After all, the left movers and the right movers are the same quantum system. So whatever happens to these operators should happen for the L tilde operator. So A must be the same. Now from here, all we can tell for sure is that L0 minus L tilde acting on a physical state must be 0. And this has a name. It's called the level matching condition. Which doesn't mean anything to you at the moment, but it will, hopefully, in half an hour, what this matching condition means. Okay? So we have these two formulas. Now for the open string, you find something very similar to this. Remember, for the open string, there is only one set of oscillators, so there is only one number operator, and this is what we find for the open string. Okay. All right, so we have our infinite number of constraints. So maybe I can start asking people to start solving some of the constraints and implement them and so on. But you would say, if I did that, you would say, well, this looks a little bit complicated because these constraints are quadratic in the operators. So we have an infinite number of quadratic constraints. That looks a little bit complicated. Yep, looks complicated. So we have these quadratic constraints to impose. And that looks complicated. Well, it turns out that there is a way to linearize these constraints. That sounds spectacular. And the way to do it is something that will be very useful. Actually, it's useful in many theories. In gauge theory, in four dimensions, it's very useful. And say in QED, is something that probably something that you have done already. Yeah, it's called the Lycon quantization. Okay. Well, what do we mean by the Lycon? It means to go to special coordinates. Okay. So we're working in d minus 1, 1 space time. Okay. This is our space time, the target space. So if we have our coordinates, x0, x1, x2, xd minus 2, xd minus 1, okay? These are our usual choice of coordinates. Now we want to do something special. We want to combine x0 with xd minus 1. And why do we want to do that? Well, one of the reasons is that the oscillators that are giving us trouble are the ones associated with the x0 direction, right? So maybe if we combine them with a spatial direction, something nice will happen. Well, let's see. So the way we combine them is by introducing new coordinates. Okay? The normalization here is just for convenience, 1 over square root of 2. Just a convenient choice. Okay. Now, in terms of this, our coordinates are x plus x minus, and what we call xi, with a Latin index. This index goes from 1 to d minus 2, and these are called the transfer directions to the Lycon that you chose. Okay. So these are the transfers. Directions. Okay? Now, if you have two vectors, say u in these coordinates, and v, so you have u and v, the Lorentz invariant inner product, which is a thing that appears all over and over again in our computations, is something that we better compute once and for all, right? Because we are probably going to be using it many times. So this thing in these coordinates happens to be, and that's the reason for the normalization, minus u minus v plus minus u plus v minus plus. So imagine, well, it depends on the notation you want. Let's not use any notation. Let's just do it explicitly. From 1 to d minus 2, ui, vi. Sometimes I like to denote this as u dot v and put a t to remind myself that this is in the transfer directions. But let's see if I'm going to use that. OK. How is this going to help? Well, doesn't look like it's going to help very much. In fact, it's not going to do anything now, because before this becomes useful, we'll have to do something else. We'll have to realize that these things satisfy an algebra for a good reason. It's because our action still has an infinite number of symmetries. What are those symmetries called? Somebody said it last time. He said, well, this is the conformal group in two dimensions. So this action still has an infinite number of symmetries, okay? And the way to see that more easily is to actually go to Lycon coordinates on the world sheet, right? And in terms of this, the action happens to be something of the form. Okay. Now this should be very, very simple. Yes?
The operators?
The U and the V are two vectors. Yes. These are not even operators at the moment. These are just two random vectors in written in the new coordinates, and I want to explore, or I want to derive once and for all, what is the Lorentz invariant inner product of these two guys in these new coordinates. Because that might be useful for us. Okay. Now the action looks like this, and that means that there is something very interesting happening, which is that if we change sigma plus by any function of sigma plus, if we replace sigma plus by any function of sigma plus, meaning the new coordinate sigma tilde is any function of sigma plus, and sigma minus goes to any function of sigma minus, this action is invariant, right? I hope that the new form, this form in which I've written the action, is familiar to you from the CFT course, and this is absolutely obvious to you, right? Well, if it's not, then just compute the transformation of this piece and see that it is canceled by the transformation of this derivative. The transformation of this piece is canceled by the transformation of this derivative. Then we're done. Okay? Now, what do we do with this? Well, remember that this is tau plus sigma, tau tilde plus sigma tilde, and this thing is tau tilde minus sigma tilde. And here comes the trick. It's a nice trick, which is to add up the two. Okay? So we just add up this and this, and what do we get? Well, we just get tau tilde. But tau tilde becomes... But this should look familiar to you, right? We're saying tau tilde as a function of sigma plus and sigma minus happens to split into a completely general function of sigma plus and a completely general function of sigma minus. Does that remind you of anything? Well, it should remind you of what we did with x. Remember, the field equations here were this. But now it so happens that our coordinate tau tilde satisfies the same equation. Okay? Well, still you might say, well, so what? Looks interesting. Well, in your CFT course, you probably found that these guys, the generators, if we expand this in generators, the generators are precisely the Virasoro algebra. Okay? But that's not the trick we're going to use. The trick we're going to use is the following. Let's do everything for the open stream. With Neumann boundary conditions, okay? Very good. So, in your homework, you were asked to prove that the oscillator expansion of this thing was something like this, where P mu was alpha zero mu, but remember, through the argument we had before, it becomes related to the momentum of the string. We need alpha string square, sorry, the string length square here for dimensional reasons, plus so we have now the oscillators. So let me say n different from zero, because we have subtracted the alpha zero mode. Okay, we have put it outside. So hopefully you were able to show that that was the most general solution with Neumann boundary conditions. Okay? Now here comes the trick. Let's actually go to these coordinates. Okay? And let's look at sigma plus. At x plus, sorry. Okay? So this is the x plus component. Now, you see, I can choose new coordinates. So before we do that, let me do the following. Let me put here tau plus so all I did was to put everything with this thing in front, okay? Nothing very spectacular at the moment. What is spectacular is the following, that this is a solution to this equation, okay? Therefore, I can choose new coordinates so as to eat up all these oscillators, all these alpha plus oscillators that appear here. I can just declare that this is tau tilde. Okay. At the moment, we're doing everything classically. Okay, so this is all classically. So note what I've done. In the new coordinates, my new x plus is just this. No oscillators whatsoever in the x plus direction. That solves half of the problem, right? Because x zero, which is only the only problem that we had before with the negative norm states, appears in x plus and in x minus. So if we don't have oscillators in the x plus direction, it means that that part of the oscillators that gave us trouble is completely gone. Okay. So this looks very encouraging. Okay. If we were only able to get rid of the alpha minus oscillators, we would have a completely unitary theory. Okay. Wouldn't that be spectacular? All we have to do is to find a way of getting rid of the alpha minus oscillators. If we do, then the only oscillators left in our theory to be quantized are the alpha I oscillators, which are the transverse oscillators. And those have nice commutation relations. So there is no problem with those. So still, everything could have been done for any coordinates. X plus and X minus didn't play much of a role here. Yes.
Can you just say that if you put out tilde and how did you factorize out the L A squared P plus?
How do I factorize what?
The L A squared P plus
out of the. Oh, this is a number, right? Remember. This is in the classical theory. We are now defining a classical theory, and then we will quantize it. Okay? So this is all classical. So I'm completely fine with this. This is a general solution of the field equations, and tau tilde, all it had to do was to be a general solution of the field equations.
How did you show that it is?
Sorry?
How did you show that it is? Or is it automatically because it's...
That tau tilde had to be... No, sorry. What's the question?
Why is it a general solution?
Well, x is a general solution of which one, tau or x?
Tau.
Tau. Remember, from the conformal invariance argument, the argument that we had just here, right? The argument was that we can define new coordinates and our theory is invariant. Okay? This was tau plus sigma, and this was tau tilde minus sigma tilde. And now I used a very deep trick, right? Which was to add up the two just to write down tau tilde as half of a general function of sigma plus a general function of sigma minus. But that was the name of a general solution of this equation. Right? But I'm Some of you might be thinking that I'm cheating, and I'm cheating very badly, because I'm doing everything classically. So I'm using a symmetry of the theory, which is conformal symmetry, this symmetry under these transformations. And what could happen? That in the classical, in the quantum theory, that symmetry is anomalous. If that happens, then I'm in deep trouble, because nothing that what I'm doing here is valid. Okay? So I just have to cross my fingers and hope that nothing wrong will happen. Okay? Otherwise, the theory that I'm quantizing here, or that I'm going to quantize here, has nothing to do whatsoever with the theory I started with. Okay? Well, but probably if we are spending time doing this, is that there will be a way out, right? Otherwise, we'll be doing it in a different way. Okay. But is it clear now what the goal is? We want to get rid of the alpha minus oscillators. But we have the constraint . And here is where the power of these new coordinates will come in. Because remember, from the homework too, we have to impose this constraint, right? But x dot and x prime are nothing but two vectors, u and v, say. So that constraint, that Lorentz invariant inner product, is just this combination. So let's write it down. So the combination is minus x dot minus, I think I'm not going to say it. I'm just going to write it. There is no way I can say it. That's the constraint. Okay? Yeah, I'm saving. That already saved like 2 minutes. Okay. But let's look at this object here. In this, we have found that x plus is a very, very simple function of tau only, not of sigma. So x plus, derivative with respect to sigma tilde of x plus, this is this object, vanishes. So there is no piece there. X dot plus is actually a great object too. Happens to be, this is derivative with respect to tau tilde of x plus. Using this happens to be ls squared p tau. Now, from this equation, we learn that x prime minus is 1 over l string squared plus the sum of these guys. So isn't this spectacular? We're just this close. We're finding that x minus has to be a function of the transverse oscillators only, of the transverse directions. And that comes from our constraint. So in your homework, you were also supposed to show, or to get some intuition on what this constraint meant, and this constraint precisely was telling you that the oscillators, the string had to oscillate in directions that are only transferred to the motion. And now this is precisely what it's telling us, that we were able to get rid of the alpha plus oscillators, and hopefully from here we will be able to get rid of the alpha minus oscillators. Now remember, the constraints were quadratic, but by using this trick, we found that the constraints are now linear, because if we plug here alpha prime minus, so let's put a minus here just to get that guy. Okay? Let's look at this object, just a minus component. Let's take the derivative with respect to prime, to sigma, of that. So the derivative becomes, if I do it correctly, we can actually include n equals 0. It doesn't matter. So we can actually do it from minus infinity to infinity. Okay. Let's see. Minus e to the I n tau sine n sigma. Okay. If I did it correctly, that should be the derivative with respect to sigma of that object over there. Well, okay, you say no, you haven't, because there is an L string there. The eyes are fine. Everything is fine. So that would be this piece. Okay? Now, this will have to be equal to the same thing, but now with an I. Okay? Now we compute these guys here, and we put them here. So we get infinite sums of oscillators again. Okay, we can call them M. If this is N, we can call them M and S. Okay. Well, I don't think I'm going to attempt to actually carry out the computation. I'll leave it as an exercise. But you know now what I want to do. What I want to do is simply, now that I have this expression, this is supposed to be valid for any tau, so I'll set tau to 0, okay, at 0 time. So I get rid of this, okay. Remember, I have to set tau to 0 after I take the derivative with respect to time, not before. So in the final formula, I set tau to 0. And now I'll integrate from 0 to pi the whole object, d sigma sine of, say, you see, this is it's always unfortunate. There is an N, there is an M, an S. I don't know, maybe a Q, Q sigma. The whole equation. So if I do that, I'll project out the alpha Q minus oscillator, and it will become a function of only these oscillators over here. So that's precisely what we wanted to do. Yes?
Are you in the tilde coordinates or the original coordinates?
We are in the open string, so there are only alpha. Oh, the coordinates.
Yeah,
very good. Thank you, yes. These are all tildes. Yeah, these are all tilde coordinates. So this is a mess. Well, it's not really a mess. It's simple to compute, but on the blackboard, it would be a mess, I assure you, if you try to do it. So I'm just going to tell you, if you do it carefully, you will find the following. You will find that this guy happens to be 1 over, this combination is dimensionless, so that's great. Okay, that's what you will find. Something very simple, beautiful, no strange factors, spectacular. So I encourage you to actually do the computation. All you have to do is an integral with two sines and one cosine. So that's really trivial. Okay? Now, why did I write it like that with an extra long parenthesis? Well, the reason is that, of course, if n is different from 0, we can now go to the quantum theory very easily without doing anything fancy. We just put normal ordinates there, but it doesn't matter because the alphas commute. But if n is equal to 0, once again, I have the same ordering problem. Okay, so I have to introduce my ambiguity here, which is parameterized by a number. Yes?
Would that thing be the central charge?
No. No, the central charge, we will do it later. Yeah, not today, because I want to get to the spectrum of the theory today. Right. We will see the relation later. Let's not go into that at the moment. Okay. But now we are done, almost done, because we have a theory where the only oscillators are the transfer oscillators, and they have beautiful commutation relations, so we can build a Hilbert space using them, a vacuum, and build our physical Hilbert space. So, are we done? Can we just go home? So this looks like a victory. We have manifest unitarity. But what was the prize? We are supposed to be quantizing a string that lives in flat spacetime, right? Well, what is the symmetry of this flat spacetime? The Poincaré group, right? Which in particular contains the Lorentz group. Is it manifest that the theory we're building, the quantum theory we're building, has Lorentz invariance? So we need SOD minus 1,1 Lorentz invariance, which is 1. What symmetry do we have manifest? Well, life is tough here. Well, somehow we knew that there had to be a prize, right? I mean, we're doing everything. Everything has been done so trivially that there has to be a prize somewhere. And the prize is that we are only making SOD minus 2 manifest, which is a contraction of these indices, remember? So this is the contraction with just the identity matrix. And that makes SOD minus 2 rotations a symmetry of this theory. So, what happens to the Lorentz symmetry? Well, you would say, no, but wait a minute. You started with a Lorentz invariant theory. Remember our string? We started with an object that was SOD minus 1,1 invariant. But then we did something along the way, and we ended up in this theory that only has SOD minus 2 manifest, right? So clearly, in the classical theory, everything should be fine, but quantum mechanically, if there was an anomaly anywhere along the way to get to these formulas, then we will not be able to recover the Lorentz invariance of the theory. Okay? And we said where the anomaly could be. The anomaly could be, the only important thing we did was to assume a new symmetry, a symmetry of the action that was there, which was conformal invariance. If there is an anomaly in the conformal invariance, then there would also be an anomaly in the Lorentz group in this theory, in this form of writing the theory. Okay. So let's see. Okay. Let's see. Who thinks is there going to be an anomaly? Yeah, 1, 2. Yeah, otherwise I wouldn't be making such a big deal out of it, right? I would just say, this is it, we're done. There is an anomaly. How do we see? Yeah, now I want you to see, I want you to raise your hands. How do we see that there is an anomaly? Can we perform a test? Let's try to test this. A test of an anomaly. How do we do it? Well, the first step or the simplest test we can do is to look at the spectrum of the theory. Okay? Well, remember, if you want to compute the mass square of something, we can read it from p square, but p square is a vector. P is a vector, so we can compute its inner product using the same rule here, which then gives us 2 times p plus p minus minus the sum of pi pi. Okay? Now, if you look at this formula here, this guy is associated with p minus, okay, if we set n equals to 0. So let's put n equals 0 everywhere. Okay. Now, this guy is associated with p minus. If we move this to this side, we will get something here that is proportional. P plus and P minus. We can extract from here the M equals to 0 term. So if you extract it, we get alpha 0 I, sum over I. But this is proportional to PI, PI, or PI squared. Doesn't matter. Sum over I. Okay? Now, when you put this guy and send it to the other side, you find precisely this combination. And therefore, you learn that the mass operator turns out to be, once again, this combination, n minus a, where n, now there is a very important difference. This n is a number operator that only contains the transfer oscillators. Okay? Remember, these are the only oscillators that we're quantizing in the theory. Well, the usual, there is a half here, but we can remove the half and go from 1 to infinity. If we just split the sum into 2, the usual trick, and then we will get this operator. Okay? Now we have this. Okay? So we can start looking at the Hilbert space and see what happens. So let's compute the mass of the vacuum. This is the state with no oscillators. Remember, this is a number operator, so we will compute the state with no oscillators. This is the momentum of the state, which we call k. People usually call it k. Now, the mass, what is the mass? We just apply this operator to the state. N gives you 0, so we'll get the mass is minus A. Well, if A happens to be a positive number, we have a tachyon there. Well, but a tachyon is not as bad as Gauss, right? So this is not such a big deal if A happens to be positive. But let's continue. Let's do N equals 1. So what do we have? N equals 1, we need something. We need a state whose eigenvalue with respect to the number operator will be 1. And such a state is nothing but A minus 1 Okay. Remember the normalization. Well, in this case, I could have written alpha. It would have been fine because the normalization just has the alphas and the a's are related by a square root of m. Okay? So it doesn't really matter. Now, in this case, what do we get? We get this is the mass of these states. But what are these states? So we got d minus 2 of these states. Okay? So they look as if they were something that carries a vector index, right? So these d minus 2 objects, since we have SOD minus 2 invariants, they must form a vector. Okay? So these guys form a state which is a vector of SOD minus 2. Now, is there any representation in SOD minus 1 comma 1 that has anything to do with a vector in SOD minus 2? Do you remember from the first tutorial? You did some exercise, and there was some SOD minus 2. What was the connection between SOD minus 2 and SOD minus 1 comma 1? What was SOD minus 2? Yeah. Very good, very good. SOD minus 2 was the Lyot group of a massless particle with respect to SOD minus 1 comma 1. So SOD minus 2 was the Lyot group of massless states in SOD minus 1 comma 1. So if you had if you have a massless particle, a massless vector in this dimension, under the Lyot group, it will have to transform as a vector too. Okay? And likewise, there is no other representation of this group which will just go into a vector of SOD minus 2. Okay? There is nothing else here. We didn't find any other state. So this is just a vector. And the only choice for the theory to be Lorentz invariant is that this vector must be massless. And what does it mean to be massless? It's like a gauge boson, right? A gauge boson must have only excitations. The degrees of freedom must be only transversal, cannot be longitudinal, right? And that's why we only have the physical degrees of freedom here. But now we see the problem. If we have any A, any random A, this state will not be massless, right? And if it's not massless, it means that we are breaking. We have a theory which is not Lorentz invariant in SOD minus 1, 1 dimensions, in B minus 1, 1 dimensions. So if we want this theory to be equivalent to the original theory, this is the only choice we can make. So this was the best case scenario. Okay? Well, but this was only a test. Does this guarantee that the theory is Lorentz invariant? Well, not really. It's only a necessary condition, but we have to check whether it's sufficient. Okay? So the only way to check, so the final check, so we can think about this as a warning. It's telling us that there was an anomaly, and there could still be more anomalies. Okay? So the warning is telling us that we have to check everything. So the final check is the full Lorentz algebra. Okay? Also from the homework, you were supposed to compute the angular momentum operators. I don't think you were supposed to show that this was the formula, but it would be nice if you did it. Okay. So I think you were supposed to compute it in terms of x's. But if you plug in the oscillator expansion of the open string, you should be able to find this. Now, once again, this guy is going to quantum operators, no problem, because mu and nu are different. Okay. Now, since we're short of time, let me just say that in our new coordinates, if you compute the commutator relations just as a group in these coordinates, you will find that this is zero, or this must be zero. Okay? But the question is this true for our theory? Yes.
I.
Well, you just put minus and I here.
Oh, that's what you get.
Yeah, very good question. These are the new components in our light coordinates, right? So mu and nu are just the labels of the components. Okay? So the question is this true? The answer is no. It's not equal to zero. So that looks like a disaster. In fact, it could really be a disaster because it happens to have an infinite sum with some numbers here. Okay, that happens to be the answer of this thing. So it sounds as if we have to set to zero an infinite number. We have an infinite number of constraints again. We have to set to zero all these guys. But what could these guys depend on? Well, these guys can only depend on the only, these are numbers, so they can only depend on the dimension, on the number of fields we have. There is nothing else they could depend on because A has already been fixed to 1. That's what we found. Well, luckily, if you suffer through perhaps a month of computations, you will find that this commutation relation happens to be equal, or these deltas happen to be equal to this. Miraculously, for A equals to 1, they all have a 0 when D is equal to 26. Just so happens to be the case. Yes?
When you write the differential term in here,
yes.
Alpha N is related to alpha N.
Yes, thank you. Yes. Okay. Very good. So what's the conclusion? Well, in the Lycon quantization, we found manifest unitarity is manifest. And Lorentz invariance is there only for A equals 1 and D 26. Okay? So that's how precise the theory is. The theory happens to tell you precisely what the dimension of the spacetime it wants to live on. Okay? Wants to live in. Very good. So I think we can stop here. Yes.
So what that means is our strings can only be massless.
Cannot what?
They can only be massless.
Can only be? No, no, no. Oh, no.
We set
okay. Zero. So we haven't finished yet today. Okay. The spectrum. So we have our guide here for n equals 0. It turns out to be a tachyon, right? For n equals 1, so we got our gauge boson. Okay, so we got a gauge boson in a space-time. For n equals 2, okay, so this is the exercise for you. For n equals 2, the states will be something of the form, say, minus 1, alpha minus 1, I and j. Okay? If you want n equals to minus 2, n equals to be 2, you get something like this, acting on the vacuum. But you could also have alpha
pi minus 2 acting on the back. Okay? So your exercise is to show, well, this is definitely not massless, right? So these ones have mass, alpha prime m squared equals 1. Okay? In fact, there is an infinite power of massive states, right? So the theory is far from being just a massless guy. It's actually just playing with these guys. And now the game is the following. Try to combine these guys into nice representations of, they should fall into nice representations of SO 25.1. Now, since these guys are massive, the little group is SO 25. While the little group for this guy was SO 24. Okay? So that's why this guy was happily being just a vector in 24 dimensions, because the little group was SO 24. Okay? So now we're done today. Unless, well, any other questions? No questions? Okay.
Why do we like this theory? Like, why do we think it's a good theory to look into if it tells us these bizarre restrictions on A and B?
Right. So you would say at this moment we should just give up, right? Well, I think people would probably have given up if B would have been first not an integer number, could have been, and second if it had been less than 4, right? Now, being greater than 4 is not really a problem because gravity has only been tested up to distances of orders of millimeters. So we don't really know if there are extra dimensions out there. So experimentally, it's not even ruled out, okay, that there could be extra dimensions. Okay, so that's not a problem. And why people continue with this even at that time was because when we do the closed string, we will find that in the massless sector, there will be a graviton. Okay? And this turns out to be a theory that contains gravity. Later on, when we understand even more, it contains in the spectrum a graviton, but in fact, it's quantum mechanics, the requirement that the theory is conformally invariant. Quantum mechanically will tell you that it's only consistent if you satisfy Einstein's equations. So imagine what Einstein would have thought, right? His equations are actually coming from an anomaly, from canceling an anomaly, which is a purely quantum mechanical effect. Mm-hmm. So it's just completely beautiful. Quantum mechanics, the way we know it, together with these assumptions that you have these extended objects, ends up giving you Einstein relativity. So you could imagine why people got excited about this. And then later on, people started to understand that the theory actually makes sense. Okay? Well, hopefully by the end of next week, you will get a better feeling of why people are still did this and still do it. Okay. All right, one more question. Oh, well, so the question is, this tachyon looks ugly. Why do we have a tachyon? But guess what? You also have one in the standard model. The Higgs, right? If you take the Higgs and you expand it around this point, the Higgs has a negative mass square. All it's telling you is that you're expanding the theory around a stupid vacuum that is unstable. That's all it's telling you, the presence of this vacuum. Finding the true vacuum in the bosonic string for open string is now understood what happens. In the closed string is still an open problem, so that would be a great research problem. Not for your 2-month research. Well, it depends.
Isn't the mass square equal 0 at that point?
Okay.